science is interesting, and if you don't agree, you can fuck off.
Still haven't got that swear word unbleached.
Maybe next year.
Maybe next year. So, Alan, what have we got?
Well, at very short notice, because some of us were busy marking exams yesterday because summer school just finished. Mm-hmm. So we had a 62% pass rate. Which,
wow. Is that good?
Well, ask TEC because they make the rules. Okay. You know, and if you drop below 60%, then they threaten to take your funding away. So
for that paper or for the department?
For the particular paper, I believe. I believe that's the way it works.
That's very sad.
So it's either 60% or 50% or something. So what does that lead to, folks? Grade inflation. I didn't say that. That wasn't me.
Okay.
That's my rant over for the day. Anyway, okay, today we're going to start off by talking about this thing that is called Oumuamua.
What is that?
Oumuamua. Okay, that is a, well, that's a very good question, actually, and that's what they're trying to find out tomorrow, in fact, American time. Tomorrow our time, today American time.
Ah, okay.
So, what this is. So in about October, there was a telescope in Hawaii that discovered what they thought was a comet. And it was traveling very fast, and it sort of displayed all the hallmarks of a comet. And they tracked it for a few days, and then they figured out, well, if it is a comet, then it's very unusual, the path that it's taking, the speed that it's traveling. And it doesn't look like it's of the solar system. So all of the comets and everything sort of basically orbit the sun, either, you know, very close or very far away or whatever, but eventually they all end up orbiting the sun. And this thing was, its trajectory and its speed said that, no, it must have come from interstellar space somewhere, so it must have originally come from another sun.
Another sun. There's more than one sun.
There's plenty more than one sun.
Another day.
Indeed, yes. So they then thought, okay, well, let's have a look at this thing in a little bit more detail. And they figured out that it's roughly about 100 meters in size, so it's not very big. But the interesting thing was that it's not round. It's like 10 to 1 in terms of length to width. So that's not very usual for a comet. Or, in fact, it's an asteroid, as they later found out, or so they think anyway. But it's perfect for, let's say, an interstellar spaceship, you know, because you've all seen Star Wars and they're all big and long and they're, you know, it's kind of now, apart from the Death Star, which is kind of, you know,
round.
But so although nobody's actually saying it, what they have decided to do is to get 10 very precious hours of time on the world's largest steerable radio telescope for tomorrow to actually look at this thing. That's a good question. It's a group of scientists that are interested in, you know, sort of these unidentified objects, I guess you could call them, I suppose.
And who owns the telescope?
That would be probably the US government or the NSF or someone like that, right. I would imagine. But it's in the States.
This group has had to pay them?
Maybe, can we book this time for this telescope? Yeah, that's basically it. Because big pieces of kit, you can get basically for free time on them, but that takes a long time in advance to get this sort of stuff, you know. So time is precious. And so they managed to get time on this at very, very short notice. And they're going to spend 10 hours tomorrow having a look at this and seeing if they're getting sort of any unusual radio waves and stuff, perhaps,
what would those look like?
Well, that's anybody's guess. I think
something that we may not have seen before is that
possibly, or just some sort of periodic maybe signal or something like that. So, you know, whatever they do, they're going to get some data. They'll have to interpret that and see whether it could possibly be an alien spacecraft, possibly. That's and as I say, nobody's really sort of saying this, but you know, that the reason they got the time on this thing so damn quickly, you know, where you've got to book it years in advance. And so who knows?
So there's a literal possibility that this, not a comet, has come from somewhere else.
Yeah.
And may contain...
Had a look at us and thought, nah, bugger it, we won't bother, maybe. Probably. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? State of the world.
This thing is travelling faster than any sort of thing has been seen before, really. So it was going about 300,000 kilometres an hour when it went round the sun.
Casually.
that's motoring. So, you know, there's enough unusual things about this to make it worth studying, obviously. And it's only a small thing. And so they're talking possibly about getting a probe up and stuff like that. But that, to me, would it's traveling so fast that it'll be out of here before they get that all together and everything, you would have thought. Right. But who knows? We'll see.
So, wait, what's your guess on what it could be?
I'd say a slab of rock probably would be my guess. Okay. I think we'll go
the anticlimactic answer.
We'll go for Occam's razor on that one, I think.
So. But it's worth following.
Well, I mean, I once heard an interesting theory about sort of alien life and stuff like that, and people saying, or somebody saying that basically a civilization gets to a point where they can unlock the means of their own self-destruction, which we've done. And then they get stupid people in charge of said means of self-destruction and they destroy themselves. So the chances of there actually being any alien life out there are probably nil because they've all gone and bloody self-destructed because they're stupid.
Do you think, though?
I think that's a really sensible explanation.
There's
think
some pretty
about
stupid
it.
Humans.
Oh, the very stupid humans, yes.
But what if, you know, outer space life is just far more intelligent and...
What's the great quote from, I think it was Goethe or someone, saying that against stupidity the very gods themselves fight in vain?
That's kind of dark.
Maybe we'll leave it there. Luminescent fingerprints. I was quite interested in this. This is good for crime scenes.
Yeah, no, this is really interesting. So fingerprinting, I think that was invented around about sort of the mid-19th century from memory, there or thereabouts. And... the trouble with fingerprints, obviously, they're hard to see, so you've got to visualize them somehow, make them easier to see. And so what was found was sort of a variety of powders would do the trick, or dyes or stuff like that, that sort of bring them up against whatever background they're on. And obviously the background that they're on determines the sorts of powders and dyes and stuff like that that you can use to look at these things. So what would be really nice would be some way of making these things stick out like a sore thumb, regardless of what surface they're on. And the obvious way to do that is to use some sort of material that is fluorescent. So basically when you shine UV light on it, it shines back at you, essentially, you know. So all the stuff when you go clubbing and stuff like that, well, you know, I don't, but, you know. When
you go clubbing, Alan.
All your UV lights and everything, you know, shines out and everything, and then when you turn the lights off, you know, everything's back to normal. And so that's fluorescence. And so that was used for a while, but then they figured out that on certain surfaces fluoresce themselves. And so you can't actually then see the fingerprint against the fluorescent. So the fluorescent fingerprint against the fluorescent background, that's not going to work.
Cancels itself out.
It does. So what you want is luminescent. Okay, so fluorescent.
Okay.
Okay.
The difference.
Okay, here we go. So the difference. So fluorescence, you shine ultraviolet light on something and it emits visible light. Okay, only as long as the ultraviolet light is turned on. As soon as you turn it off, gone. So luminescence, you put the UV light on, your sample emits visible light that you can see, and then when you turn the UV light off, it continues emitting visible light.
How?
Yeah.
How? Long-lived excited states.
And that's what?
That would take an episode or three of Death Science.
Okay.
But basically, it's the slow release of energy, essentially, okay?
So does it last for a long time?
It depends on the sample that you're using, but it can last for a long time, yeah. And so what these scientists in Wuhan in China have come up with is fluorescent nanoparticles. Okay, now nanoparticles are, as the name suggests, particles that are on the nanoscale, 10 to the minus 9 meters or nanometers. And these things are absolutely, absolutely tiny, so they can get into every nook and crevice and, you know, everything, which is perfect for fingerprints, because that's what you want. If you're going to make an image of a fingerprint, you want something that's going to get into every nook and crevice. And what they've done is they've taken these nanoparticles and they've made them luminescent, and they've coated them with material that will stick to fingerprints, essentially.
Amazing.
Okay, so you've got all these amino acids in your fingerprints, and these things will stick to them, and they'll stick to them really, really well, and they'll define them really, really, really well, and they're luminescent. So what they did was they got these fingerprints, coated them in these nanoparticles, and put them onto a playing card and onto a drink can. And both of those are fluorescent. Okay, so when they turned the UV light on, they couldn't actually see very well the fingerprints against the fluorescence. But when they turned it off, lo and behold, boom, beautiful green glow of this fingerprint. And they found that it was good for fingerprints up to about 60 days old. So
that's pretty good.
Really, really, really seriously good. So this could be a big advance in forensics. I think, you know, it's a fabulous piece of work. This really, really, in hindsight, really blindingly bloody obvious.
And yeah, you kick yourself for not thinking of it first. Not been done before.
Yeah, indeed. Good question.
What, we didn't have the technology to do it? Or?
Yes. Well, nanoparticles have only sort of become big in the last sort of 10 or so years probably. So, yeah, maybe nobody had sort of thought of this. But, you know, as I say, once you say it, it is really, really obvious. So really nice piece of work.
Well, cool. Does it mean that now there's basically no fingerprints that will not be...
Able to be identified?
That's a very good question. It would all depend on probably what they've coated the nanoparticles with and whether that sticks absolutely beautifully to the fingerprints or not, but it certainly sounds like it does. So, you know, I think watch the space. I think, yes, these workers in China might be onto something here. Really cool.
Very good. Okay, quickly, the final story. Nuclear.
That was an instruction, folks.
Nuclear fusion experiments. What is that about?
Nuclear fusion. Okay, so in 1985, there was a guy by the name of Reagan and another one by the name of Gorbachev, and they had a meeting and they decided to try and get nuclear fusion working because nuclear fission is this nasty stuff, atomic bombs, radiation.
We have talked about this before.
Yes. But nuclear fusion is the clean one, but that takes a lot of energy to do, okay? So nuclear fusion could provide essentially limitless amounts of energy from things as simple as hydrogen, but you've got to heat it up to about 150 million degrees Celsius in order to be able to do that.
Right.
So, as I said, in 1985, they said, right, we're going to get this on the way. We're going to see if this is a viable energy source. And so it took about 20-odd years to get off the ground. So they started construction in France in 2007-odd, and it's down in Provence. It's absolutely beautiful down there. And I've sort of driven past it and everything. And so they just announced last week that they're halfway through. So it was actually meant to be finished in 2017, but now they've announced that it's actually half finished.
That's good to know, though.
Yes.
Progress.
Yep. And so they reckon it'll be finished. Well, they will be able to start using it in 2025. And so, as I say, what they've got to do is they've got to contain these ridiculously high temperatures of 150 million degrees Celsius in order to get the hydrogens to fuse and give out energy. They're going to be doing that for 10 years before they know whether or not it's actually giving out more energy than it's taking in.
Right. So from 2025, it's another 10 years.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you say when you say finished, you mean 2025, they're going to start...
Start the experiments, basically. Yeah. Start testing.
So this is probably quite dangerous stuff if they're dealing with very, very large amounts of heat.
Yes, very, very, very large amounts of heat. And so the way that they contain it is using enormous magnetic fields, like enormous magnetic fields. So they've got, apparently, they're building in the States an 18-metre magnet that can lift an aircraft carrier.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
That just boggles the mind. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Utterly extraordinary. So they need extraordinarily strong magnetic fields, and that holds in all of the high temperature. So it basically contains it. And it contains the plasma and everything. And, you know, it's high state physics that I can't get my head around. But
How are we going to?
So anyway, it's halfway there. So
back in
2025,
when we reach that, we'll have another Dear Science, and we'll return.
we shall.
Yeah. I just have like a tiny question. What would you use this energy for?
So generation of electricity, anything you want. So any sort of energy.
It's clean energy.
Yeah, it is. It's absolutely clean. So you've not got any radiation or anything like that. So.
But also, what's the effect on the environment? Because
none. All you're doing is basically making helium from hydrogen.
And we'd be able to replace all these other methods of.
Pretty much, you would. Yes. So so-called nuclear power would be gone. So burning fossil fuel, be gone, you know.
Yep.
It's the answer to humanity's problems, really.
Is it? Wow. And it's the French that found that?
Way to get that one in there. All right.
It's okay.
Well, we'll leave it there unless you have an answer for that, Alan.
Oui, c'est vrai. No.
I'm very proud.
All right. Thank you, Alan. We will talk with you next week for a bit of a roundup. Version of Dear Science, maybe.
Looking forward to it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, see you guys.
Bye.
That was Dear Science.